Today's episode is brought to you by Canby Foursquare Church. Since 1978, a place to grow, connect, and serve. In-person services are back with some restrictions to help ensure everyone stays safe and healthy. For the latest, visit their website at canbyfoursquare.com.
Welcome to Now Hear This, Canby,
your source for news.
The threat of a possible teacher strike was avoided this week.
There's a new irresistibly cute creature winning over fans, and its name is Scootaloo.
Sports?
It's like Lucy in the football. You want to kick a field goal, but they take it away from you.
We had to learn how to win.
Goal can't be in the last second of the game!
And interesting conversations.
Because I'm one of the strongest girls ever, and I know that for a fact.
I just really enjoy writing gossip as if I was a bear.
With an old maid daughter that make the best moonshine in the coast.
If it would have hit me in the face, I think I would have died. I really do.
I guarantee you would have died, man. Are you kidding me?
If 127,000 more Oregonians receive the COVID-19 vaccine, the state's economy can fully reopen with masks mostly a thing of the past, Governor Kate Brown said this Friday. The full reopening will be triggered when 70% or more of Oregonian adults have received at least one dose of the vaccine, a threshold Brown said the state is on track to reach by July 21st. When that happens, the county risk level framework that governs capacities at restaurants, bars, fitness centers, theaters, and other indoor entertainment venues will go away. An allowable occupancy at most places will return to 100% for the first time in 15 months. Masks and physical distancing will become a thing of the past, with a few exceptions that are in line with Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidance, airports, public transit, and healthcare settings. By and large, this means we will be able to return to the activities and traditions that we have missed for more than a year, Brown said. 4th of July barbecues, eating popcorn in a movie theater again, getting a beer after work at the local brewery with friends, restaurants and bars will be able to welcome a full house. The Pendleton Roundup? Yes, that too. Public schools will also return to full-time in-person instruction as well, the governor added. Though, by outward appearances, life will have returned to normal, the pandemic will not be entirely over. Brown and the other state public health officials still warn. The virus is and will remain a real threat to those who are either unable or unwilling to take the vaccine, they said. There isn't one pandemic in Oregon, there are two, said Oregon Health Authority Director Pat Allen. One is a pandemic that is dying out among people who are vaccinated, and the other is a pandemic that is raging as fiercely as ever among people who are unvaccinated. Between March 1st and May 31st of this year, 98% of confirmed coronavirus cases and 94% of COVID-related deaths were among those who were not fully vaccinated, health officials said. It's a dichotomy Allen described as a tale of two pandemics. The data clearly shows that if you are fully vaccinated, you can begin to put the pandemic behind you, he said. But if you're unvaccinated, the threat of COVID-19 still shadows your life. As of Friday, 2.2 million Oregonians had received at least one shot, accounting for 66.2% of the eligible population. In Clackamas County, 62.4% of the eligible population had taken their shot. Approximately 9,237 Clackamas Countyans need to get immunized for the county to reach 65%, which would put the area in the low-risk tier, where businesses and event venues may open at 50% capacity. Clackamas County's Portland metro area neighbors, Multnomah and Washington, reached that mark weeks ago. The COVID-19 vaccine is free and widely available to people 12 and older. For information about clinics and availability, visit clackamas.us/coronavirus/vaccine. Call 211 or email questions to covidvaccine@clackamas.us. If you have questions or concerns about the vaccine, consult your primary care provider or trusted healthcare professional. The Canby School Board on Wednesday voted unanimously to name Dr. Aaron Downs of the Westland Wilsonville School District as the district's new superintendent. Downs, who currently serves as Westland's Wilsonville's assistant superintendent of secondary schools, will start July 1st, replacing current superintendent Tripp Goodall after 7 years in Canby. Aaron Downs' experience as an educator, his commitment to equality, and his inclusive leadership style make him the right person to lead our district forward, said Chair Angie Dilks. We engaged in an extensive process to involve the community in this hire, and the feedback from our stakeholders helped inform our selection. The board interviewed 7 candidates for the position last week, eventually narrowing the list to 3, Alan Barber, Aaron Downs, and Brett Heller. A total of 18 candidates applied to lead the Canby School District. This week, the board met in person with each finalist. District stakeholders, including teachers, parents, community members, staff, local leaders, and administrators, also met with the finalists and provided feedback. We know Dr. Downs is a trusted, transparent leader with a commitment to listening and learning about the needs of our districts, said Vice Chair Sarah Magenheimer. Aaron Downs will partner with our educators and our families to ensure every student learns every day, and they work toward their academic and growth goals. Prior to his role as assistant superintendent in the Westland Wilsonville School Districts, Downs served as a teacher, advisor, coach, and the principal of Wilsonville High School. He earned a bachelor's and master's degree from George Fox University and a doctorate of education from Lewis and Clark College. I am humbled by the opportunity to serve as the next superintendent of the Canby School District, Downs said, and I am excited to build upon the Canby student-centered system as we work together to meet the district's academic vision. I look forward to getting to work in the coming weeks, jumping right into planning for our fall return to in-person learning this fall. Officials said Downs will collaborate with the board of directors, community partners, and school leaders, educators, and families over the coming weeks to learn more about the Canby School District as he transitions into his new role. In the wake of the city's announcement that it would not be organizing the annual Canby Independence Day celebration for the second year in a row, citing coronavirus restrictions and a lack of planning time, civic groups including the Canby Farmers Market, Canby Area Chamber of Commerce, and local businesses are planning a 4th of July celebration and car show centered on Wake Park. Call it an independent Independence Day, though city officials such as Economic Development and Tourism Coordinator Calvin LeSueur are assisting in the plans. The city has been a great cheerleader of our efforts, and we understand the difficult position they were in that forced them to cancel their traditional event, Canby Chamber Director Kyle Lang said. Much of the details are still being finalized. Organizers confirmed there will be live music, a car show, and other activities in and around Wake Park, coinciding with the Canby Farmers Market special Sunday market for the holiday. The market is typically staged on North Holly Street between 2nd and 4th. Organizers for this event plan to request additional street closures on 3rd Avenue and North Grant between 2nd and 4th, forming an H. The car show is planned for 3rd and North Grant Streets from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Sunday, July 4th. No entry fee is required. RSVP by June 25th to the chamber by calling 503-266-4600 or email chamber@canbyareachamber.org. Longtime local musician and Canby Music Store owner Brian Haynes and his team plan to provide live entertainment at the event, free of charge. Other businesses who are helping coordinate and plan the event include Ellison Team Homes, Vanessa Zimmerman at Academy Mortgage, and the Canby Current. Hey, that's us! The Book Nook on North Grant Street will offer a sidewalk sale that day, while neighboring Ebner's Custom Meats will have their barbecue pit fired up in true 4th of July fashion. Local businesses have been at the center of activity throughout the pandemic as they are more limber and able to react to changing dynamics. So it just made sense that local businesses and such would be the ones to step up to the plate and help create a 4th of July event in 2021, Lang explained. Organizers hope that vaccination rates continue to rise, dropping Clackamas County to lower risk levels or even removing the risk matrix entirely by July. At any rate, with more than 65% of Oregonian adults already having received at least one dose of vaccine, organizers of this event felt, quote, it would be safe and responsible to provide an outdoor daytime event to celebrate our Independence Day, according to Lang. We look forward to the end of summer when we believe the city will be able to engage in Canby's big weekend and restart their programming in earnest, Lang said. We truly see the city as a partner and ally in supporting our community's needs for social outlets around the holiday. Formerly known as General Canby Days, the popular event was run by local volunteers from 1982 until 2015 when the nonprofit committee sponsoring the event broke down. The city took the event over 5 years ago, rechristening it Canby's Independence Day Celebration. Before the pandemic, the annual parade and celebration was one of the most well-attended events in the Canby area, drawing record crowds of more than 10,000 in 2019. Though the future remains unwritten, we know one thing for certain. The classes of 2020 and 2021 will never forget their senior years at Canby High School. And thanks to the latest addition to the school's newly dubbed Senior Park, future students, teachers, administrators, and the community will never forget the classes of 2020 and 2021. Principal Greg Dintz and other administrators on Friday morning unveiled a larger-than-life bronze cougar statue dedicated to the class of 2021, mounted on a concrete pedestal in front of the senior rock, a 27,000-pound boulder that was donated last year to honor the class of 2020. Officials say they plan to fully redevelop this entire part of the campus in honor of all seniors, but with a particular emphasis on the two classes most impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic. In addition to the 8.5-foot-tall cougar and 3-foot-tall plinth, other additions to the park this year include a curb around the rock and a plaque dedicated to the class of 2020. Future phases will include a C-shaped walkway around the rock, benches, lighting, and vegetation. CHS administration came up with the idea of making the area around the senior rock into a senior park to remember this time and as a tribute to our students, especially to the classes of 2020 and 2021, Dint said. This statue can be a showcase for our school and community for years to come. Seniors who attended the walking prom got a sneak peek at this cougar prior to its installation. After graduation, seniors will have a chance to take pictures with the statue as well as several other stations around campus. We are excited to honor our students, especially our seniors, with this cougar statue, Associate Principal Carrie Sloan said. Cougars are known for their strength and adaptability, and our students have embodied the cougar strength in this year of COVID. The cougar statue, which stands over 6 feet tall, including its pedestal, was created by All Classics Limited out of Delaware and shipped across the country. Concrete work was donated by Dave Garber. The high school also thanked the city of Canby, Jamie Netter, Darren Monin, Todd Roberts, Jeffrey Hart, Carla Kramer, of Second Nature Landscaping Design, Gavin Smith from GHS Engineering, and Tony Sloan for their contributions to the project. For photos, find this story on our website at canbyfirst.com. The longest awaited splash pad in the history of America is finally ready to open. The grand opening of the Maple Street Park splash pad will be 4 p.m. Friday, June 18th, just in time for the summer break, though not in time for the heat because it's been hot. Built with $475,000 of SDC, system development charge fees paid by residential and commercial developer funds, the new splash pad was completed last August, but its opening was delayed by COVID restrictions, the September wildfires, and the city administrator vacancy. Officials had hoped to open the new feature by Memorial Day weekend, but faced some challenges. As City Administrator Scott Archer explained during this week's City Council meeting, we'll probably be able to get that open earlier going forward, but this year with COVID stuff and getting it ready to be operational for the first time, it took a little bit longer, Archer said. Engineers and public works staff will be doing some final tests, run-throughs, and routine maintenance in the weeks ahead to ensure the spray park is ready for the long season ahead. We want to make sure that we've got this right before we open it, and this requires a bit more time, Council President Tracy Hensley explained. Once we have a season of operation and experience under our belts, future years will be much more straightforward in turning on the system sooner when the warm weather hits. June 18th is the first full day of summer break for the Cambie School District, and the splash pad will be open daily from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. for the remainder of the summer.
Hey Tyler, I was reading an article the other day and I saw that 53% of Americans say they value technology even more since the COVID outbreak.
Oh yeah, I think I saw that article in Obvious News Weekly.
Okay, you don't have to be mean.
Seriously though, it is true. I know that I can't function anymore without all of my connected devices. And I heard that DirectLink saw a huge spike in internet traffic after the stay-at-home order began last year.
Yeah, it's a good thing DirectLink works hard to provide constant, reliable broadband service even during tough weather, peak use hours, and that big jump in increased demand.
Right, and we need access to a quality connection more than ever. We're working from home, the kids are still distance learning, and I've even had a few online doctor's appointments.
Yeah, not only that, but so many of our entertainment options have gone virtual. They're streaming TV shows and movies, Zoom game nights, and online gaming, so people really need reliable internet.
Wait. With all of that extra online activity going on, don't we have to worry about usage limits and high bills from using too much data?
Come on, Tyler. How many times have we been over this? DirectLink doesn't have data caps and doesn't charge extra fees for high usage. It says so right there on their website. Visit directlink.coop today to learn more. Joining us on the Cambie Conversation now are Shelley and Eric Arndt. They are the owners and founders of the new Art-O-Matic Gallery, which is coming soon to the former space of the Book Nook in the Graham Building. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello.
Welcome to the Now Hear This Cambie podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. We're very excited for you to be joining the Cambie community. We were joking before, no relation to the Arndts that of the road and of the other Cambie family.
Not as far as you know.
Well, why don't you start by telling us just a little bit about your background? Do you have a background in the arts?
We've always been supporters of the arts in all different forms. Music, theater, painters, photographers, all kinds. And we're, being from...
I'm a mime. No,
from being from...
very supportive of that.
Born and raised in Minnesota, and the Twin Cities has a very vibrant and diverse art scene.
Yeah,
so we've always been supporters there, and so coming out here, we kind of took that love of the arts with us, and
However, so to add to that, I actually have been painting for over 30 years. Oh, wow. I am an acrylic painter.
Okay. Is
I
that one of yours?
No, I
okay.
didn't. No, that's Holly.
Beautiful. Yeah.
Yes, it is. No, I do more whimsical gnomes type paintings, fairies. And Eric is actually, he just picked up woodworking a couple of years ago, as well as some photography.
Photography.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible painter and drawer, but
yeah.
I'm learning.
Yeah.
But still a creator.
Yeah.
So we have always been supportive, and whenever we can purchase local or when there's an art fair as an example, we try to purchase as much local art that we can.
That's great.
And our walls actually were kind of the driving force of this.
Yeah.
The artists on our walls.
Yeah.
So.
So how new are you to the area from the Twin Cities?
We moved out here at the end of September, arriving about early October, and so pretty new.
Okay. Awesome. What brings you out here?
Yeah, we were at a unique point in our life where we were early 40s and empty nesters, and at a point in our careers where we could take a chance and move somewhere, relocate. And we fell in love with the area when we vacationed out here with our family back in 2019 and took our boys out. We're in Astoria and traveled along the coast and the Gorge and Mount St. Helens, and just really fell in love with everything in the whole area. And so fast forward to early January of last year, and we were this point where we decided, you know what, we do want to make a move. We want to head out to Oregon.
Yeah.
Then a pandemic hit and wildfires.
Yeah. So, September. Yeah, yeah. October,
so
yeah.
We were actually trying to close
on
our house.
That's from September to October, I think.
Yeah, we put in our offer on the house just a few days before the wildfires. Yeah. Hit. So
well,
it was,
I'm glad you didn't take that as some sort of sign from the universe.
Well, we were scared watching from afar.
That doesn't usually happen, I promise. I've been here
for
a few years.
That's what we've been told.
So it was hard to watch from afar, for sure. Yeah, yeah. Just both from trying to home, but
sure.
Also seeing what I was already working with my firm remotely starting the beginning of September and really hearing firsthand stories of, you know, just how challenging it was here. And so we really actually were eager to get out here and you know, get on the ground and start volunteering, helping any way we could with the community and help with them rebuilding. So
That and also supporting a lot of local businesses that were that we think were still shut down at that point, or were only doing takeout and delivery at that time.
Yeah.
I remember coming here and thinking, oh, we need to go out for a place to eat or get some dinner or something.
Right,
and then,
no, everything's evacuated.
Everyone's gone.
Yeah. New furniture, new things that we needed, everything we really kept within town. It's at, you know, 95%. We both, you know, we're working remotely from home and, you know, just trying to keep all of our business here. And we continue to, as, you know, Canby really has everything that we need here. So.
As much as we can.
But they're missing an art gallery.
Yes, exactly.
We're looking to decorate our home.
So, yeah, we totally buried the lead. So tell us about Art-O-Matic. It's obviously a gallery and much more. So
it
just
is.
Tell us about your vision.
Well, the vision started back in February when we were visiting Newport for Eric's birthday. And we saw all the galleries out there and how they have multi-medium, you know, art, you know, wood, glass, metal.
Right.
You know. And driving out back from the coast to Canby, we started talking and realized there really wasn't much anything out here. We, you know, did our research. We found out that within the county there were only two other galleries, I believe. And there, you know, just really wasn't an outlet for anyone.
Yeah.
So we came up with the idea, we talked to the city, and they were fully supportive, which is amazing. Everyone has been so supportive of this idea.
Yeah.
And I think that's the whole reason why this business moved so quickly. We started the idea in February, and by mid-April, we had already signed our lease.
Yeah.
And we typically, from what I understand, it doesn't move that fast.
Yeah.
But everybody has been so amazing, and just doors kept opening, and we just kept going through that. So the idea was to really work with artists in the way that they deserve. You know, each artist we work with, we're working on their terms, you know, what works for them. In a perfect world, we ask them, how would you like to work with a gallery? And they tell us, and that is what we're doing.
Yeah.
In addition to that, we are also going to be a creative space, a learning space. So we have a couple of our artists that want to teach the local community, you know, painting or paint pouring. We have a woman that makes jewelry out of beetle wings, and she's going to put together little jewelry kits and teach people about, you know, beetles and bugs and how they're important to the environment, as well as creating this beautiful piece of jewelry.
That sounds so cool.
It sounds amazing.
And coming back from the coast, it was, we had this idea of really, just like we were seeing in some galleries out there, really having artists of all different mediums, you know, photography, painting, wood, metal, glass, but also contemporary, you know, looking for artists that are pushing the envelope, the artists we already knew and love and, you know, have on our walls at home, kind of starting with them as our guiding vision. And but having it in a way that we're not necessarily, making it very, even playing field for folks that we don't care if they've only been practicing for a year or 40 years, professional, non-professional, hobbyists. If it's good and we like it, then we want to, you know, work with them and have it on our walls and simplifying the process also making it very approachable. Knowing, you know, we're in Canby, we have a wide range of folks here, and this isn't a. This is a different kind of gallery where, you know, someone could come in here with any amount of money and they'll find something that, you know, will be within their price range and be really cool and unique and original. But our main focus is on the local and regional artists, both known and kind of up and coming, maybe versus like those who are very professional and don't really necessarily need our help in growing yeah. their careers, but really trying to find those undiscovered artists or up and coming ones. And we did bring in about four or five national artists who are, you know, professionals, and those are the ones that, whose work we already were familiar with. And in addition to, you know, we have one individual who just started last year. She's super talented. And then, you know, Jack Genovese out of Newport, yeah. who's been at it for 45 years and doing whimsical pottery and
yeah.
everything in between.
Yeah.
Hobbyists, professionals, mm-hmm. part-timers, and they're all sharing the same wall space.
Yeah.
It's, you know.
Yeah.
And I always give the example of, we want to, you know, if a local high school student is an amazing artist, there should be no reason why they can't be hung on the wall either.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I want to help those artists grow their career. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, if they want to be seen in other galleries as well, I don't mind. Do that.
Yeah.
You know. So
awesome.
And as we looked around, there's a lot of antique shops and home refurbishing, but we weren't seeing a lot of, if you wanted to decorate your home or business, where do you go?
Right.
That isn't some mass-produced piece right. of work to find something unique, but also affordable.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that was what kind of the one guiding vision, in addition to the education piece and helping people both, you know, grow their own artistry or discover their inner artists. We plan to have an easel and a canvas set up at all times. So someone, if kids or spouse or whoever at home thinks are crazy, they can come in here, have a nice, safe, fun space to hang out and paint, you know, no charge.
Yeah.
But that just ties into that vision of helping people grow their, you know, inner artists. And
we're trying to create, we're trying to create an artist sanctuary. You know, we're trying to create our own, our artist family, our tribe of amazing, talented artists, but also showing the community that these people are here and what they can do.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Some of the talent just in Canby.
Yeah.
It's astounding.
Yeah.
And then the third piece of it, you know, the kind of business plan is to have make it a multi-use space. A lot of our fixtures and items on the main floor here will be mobile, so we can host private events, private parties, mm-hmm. office parties, what have you, book readings, you know, partnering with the Book Nook.
Mm-hmm.
So get that traffic in, but
yeah.
I'm just in a fun, try to bring a little color and, you know, bring something new and fresh to downtown Canby.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I get so excited just hearing you guys talk about it. I love the variety, especially. I think that's really cool and very accessible for people, because I think especially for folks, you know, and like Canby hasn't had an art gallery. I don't know if we've ever had one, but certainly not in a while.
Yeah, there actually was one called Wallflowers, but it was, I think more folks maybe went there for framing than we weren't here yet. But yeah, they were around for about 20 years. But just as you said, it was funny, throughout our whole planning process and research, not a single person brought it up or remembered them until actually we were finalizing our business plan. I said, oh, hey, I asked Kelvin at the city, I said, has there ever been an art gallery in here?
Yeah,
actually there was one for 20 years. They just closed in 2017. I'm like, how come nobody mentioned it? No one brought it up. So we found that kind of fascinating that it just kind of, you know, maybe went below the radar a little bit.
But I do just love that. I think it's very accessible for people that maybe don't go to a lot of art galleries or maybe feel a little intimidated to walk into, like, oh, we're a, you know, postmodern art deco specialist in the Dada era of whatever. This is just, you can almost guarantee you're going to find something that's cool, because it's all over the place. Are you going to cycle through a bit, it seems? Or?
Yes.
Will you have sort of featured in some months? Or? Speaking of kids, you guys can probably hear in the background, of course, my son just making as much noise as he possibly can for some reason. So.
He's super cute, though.
He's a great little helper.
That's the only way he gets away with it.
We do plan on, I guess how to explain that. You know, when somebody new comes in, yes, we will try to accommodate depending on the space, but we might have a waiting list.
Sure.
We're kind of
which is great already, right?
Oh my gosh. It's,
do you get the sense, especially from the Canby artists, that they've kind of been waiting for an outlet like this?
Yes. Absolutely. I think every artist that I've spoken with at some point has said, I'm so glad that you guys are doing this.
Yeah.
I'm so Aurora glad that this...
used to have a couple of galleries.
And they
that.
Do still have yeah. one. It's yeah. more of a historical art appraisal, that type. And actually, we've reached out to them, and what we're doing is different okay. than what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, when we started our research, we reached out to Oregon City and
Three Rivers
Gallery and some other art galleries, and just kind of doing our homework, and also, you know, knowing that we're all on the same page. I know, hey, it's like we're in this together to help develop artists and just provide another outlet for, you know, artists of a different style.
Yeah. Yeah.
And different approach.
Yeah, and we will definitely have difference of or artists of a different style.
Yeah, yeah.
But we will be rotating. We'll also have exhibits. You know, some of our artists, they just have more really cool art than what we have the space to, you know, afford them at one time. So that's where, yeah, having an exhibit where then we can show more of their pieces at one time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, awesome.
Yep.
Where's the name and kind of the brand come from? There's seems to be a particular focus in some of your social media. And...
Yes. So Artomatic comes from, it stems from Alice in Wonderland, the Mad
uh-huh.
Hatter.
Uh-huh.
I'm a huge fan of the book and, well, the whole story itself. And I think when coming up with this logo or the name, I wanted something that would be fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, immediately thought of Alice in Wonderland. And just how it makes me still feel like a kid.
Yeah.
And how when you think of Alice in Wonderland, like, because I love that so much, it just brings me back to a time. And I felt like, let's make it fun.
Yeah.
I want to make it approachable. And I, yeah, I've always loved like the colors, and I love color. So that's why we painted the walls we did. It's they're Alice's colors.
Looks fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have a...
Sort of eggshell, is it, or like kind of a blue?
The color is called Forget Me Not.
Okay.
But it's a pale blue,
yeah,
teal.
Yeah, I mean, like anything is better than the beige. I mean, like you could paint it white, and there's like great, you know, improvement.
Yes, but,
yeah.
but I
but
don't.
This was,
but I like you, color.
Yes.
So
I'm just saying.
Yes.
It was
yes.
hard not to clear that bar, but you were way above it.
Yes. Yes. I also have a Cheshire cat in here for those who want to
yep.
find him.
Yes. See him over there.
Yes. So really it was just bringing me back to my childhood, and what really resonated with me is something that was fun and childlike. And I think, too, you know, one of the things is with artists, I believe that everyone has an artist inside of them. And it just is a matter of finding the medium.
Yeah.
But when developing your artist, it's almost like you have to, it's like a child.
Yeah.
You have to nurture it. You
yeah.
have to protect it.
Yeah.
And I felt like without the whole theme of Alice in Wonderland, like feeling like it's a child,
right.
It would help.
You have to set it loose on a podcast and basically derail everything with their background noise. No,
yes.
So tell us a little bit more about your plans for the classes and how folks can, when the time, at the appropriate time, engage in those and learn about those.
We'll have, you know, classes about paint and sip parties, right?
Okay.
Which
yeah.
are really popular. Classes for children, like the bugs and other things, as
yeah.
well as classes for adults, whether brand new or existing artists that just want to grow. You know, we have a professional photographer that will be one of our artists and has a ton of knowledge and experience, and, you know, would like to share that with maybe some of our newer artists or people who are interested
yeah.
in again, photography. So.
So right now, currently on our website, we do have an event, an events page, and if you scroll down a little bit, there's already a paint and sip set July 30th.
Nice.
People can RSVP through that website.
Uh-huh.
Right now, we can only limit 20 tickets
yeah.
Due to the restrictions.
Yeah.
However, if we can find out once we get closer to the time that we can have more, we will free more up.
Yeah.
The cost, I believe, is on the website. It's, I think, $35. It's the painting that's that people will be painting is also on the website.
Nice.
So people kind of get an idea of what will be painted that first class.
Yeah.
And then they pay here.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Yeah.
And that's Artomatic.
Artomatic.com.
Two Ds.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes.
And same on social media.
Correct. Facebook and Instagram.
Check that out.
Mm-hmm.
What is the timeline that we're looking at, do you think? I always caution and sort of hesitate. People kind of tend to give a little rosier than
yeah.
not being able to meet. So
we are planning on opening to the public June 25th
okay.
at 10 a.m.
Wow. Yes. In 3 weeks. Three weeks. Yeah.
Really all we have left is bringing down some gallery lighting in here and hanging the track.
Okay.
The hanging track.
Cool. And you have enough artists and exhibits to start?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Actually,
yes,
we're now at a point where artists are going to, you know, on a waiting list to kind of get in on the next rotation.
Yes.
So
wow.
we're definitely.
That's amazing, you guys. That's so cool.
Thank you.
Good for you. Yeah.
It is. It's just amazing how this one idea just became something so much more.
Yeah.
You know. So yeah. It's just.
And you know, it's as being new here to Oregon and Canby, it's we didn't know anyone really when we first moved here, it was. And then a pandemic's going on, and we go from reduced risk and back to increased risk, and there was really no way to meet new people. And through this process, oh my gosh, we've met so many wonderful,
amazing
supportive people.
Awesome.
And hearing the artist stories, and some of them, cancer survivors, and mother of three children, single mother of three children, and just all these different stories, and being able to have an opportunity to help them in their life, in some way, whether they're just looking to get some more exposure or maybe go from part-time to full-time artist. It's really fun and unique, and we take a lot of pride in having that responsibility and hopefully carrying that torch of the arts renaissance here in Canby in the area.
Awesome. Cool. Well, anything else that you guys like to share before you go?
June 25th will be open to the public.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
We
stay tuned
to
the website and social media for other events and news.
Yes.
And as
we get more classes, we'll add them to the website.
Okay.
As we get them scheduled.
Yeah. Well, again, place looks great. Congratulations. Thanks for being on the show today. And
thank you for
welcome
having
to Canby.
Thank you
for being part of our community.
Thank you, Taylor.
Thank you.
Joining us now is Donna Ellison of Ellison Team Homes, a firm serving all across the Portland metro area with three realtors based right here in Canby. Donna, can you tell us how Ellison Team Homes started?
I started in real estate. I grew up with my dad. He was a realtor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm a second generation broker, and I grew up with him on weekends. And I learned a lot eventually working with him for several years and then going out on my own. Our family moved to Canby a couple of years ago, but we really didn't know how it was going to go. And within the first probably 3 months of being here, we literally fell head over heels in love with this place. We love the community, the spirit here. The first Christmas at Waite Park, I was literally crying because everybody was walking around saying Merry Christmas and people were drinking hot chocolate, and we got in a carriage ride with the horse, and it was just too much. You just realize it's special here. Real estate's always been my passion. It is my professional love. I enjoy the people, the relationships. So much comes out of kind of the intensity that you spend with people. You're really up in their business for a period of time, and sometimes it's a couple months, sometimes it's a couple years, sometimes it's a lifetime.
Yeah.
I feel very blessed at this point to have people that have been with me for almost my entire career.
Mm-hmm.
Clients that have bought and sold maybe 2, 3, 4, or 5 homes. I have one client that's bought and sold 8 homes with me.
Yeah.
3 generations. It's a beautiful business. It makes for a very full life.
Mm-hmm. How can people find you?
How can they not, really? we have a website, www.ellisonteamhomes.com.
Well, thank you, Donna.
Thank you for having me.
And finally, we bring this episode to a close with this edition of Canby Then, which is brought to you by The Book Nook, Canby's amazing local bookstore and gift shop. It is your source for new and used books, comic books, audiobooks, vintage books, children's books. You get the idea. It's all things books across from the backstop in downtown Canby. It's now reopened for in-store browsing. Can you hear me now? Ah, good. On Canby Then, this week, we are wrapping up our series on the history of the Canby Telephone Association, which is much better known today as our local telecommunications provider, DirectLink. It began as the Maxburg Mutual Telephone Company in 1904, but soon became an integral part of the growing community of Canby. In the early 1950s, a man named Howard C. Belton joined the board of directors for the Canby Telephone Association, which was more commonly known as the CTA. Belton, like those who had formed the telephone cooperative a half a century earlier, was a rural farmer managing about 200 acres outside of town. But his ambition stretched far beyond that. To say the Dynamo was active in civil service and state politics would be a bit of an understatement. He also served 15 years as a member of the Canby School Board and was president of the Butteville Insurance Company and the State Association of Mutual Insurance Companies. He was a senior Grand Warden of the Masonic Lodge and a past Grand Patron of the Easter Star. He spent 20 years in the legislature, primarily in the state Senate, where he had served as president in 1945 and had held the coveted title of chairman of the Ways and Means Committee for several sessions. During that tumultuous 1945 session, held near the end of World War II, Belton helped play a role, for better or worse, in the development of the Oregon tax system. He was appointed to the State Tax Committee, tasked by then-Governor Earl Snell to present recommendations as to the most attractive, advantageous, and equitable tax system consistently possible for Oregon to devise. Whether or not they accomplished that noble goal will leave up to you to decide, dear listener. Canby then is not the place for editorial comments. Belton was president of the Canby Kiwanis Club and Canby Chamber of Commerce. In his spare time, he supervised the operations of a timber stand he owned in Clackamas County. There was even an awful rumor that he slept, but only on rare occasions. Whatever he did as secretary of the Canby Telephone Board, he evidently did it very well, because on January 4, 1960, Governor Mark Hatfield appointed him Oregon State Treasurer, replacing Sig Unander, who had resigned to accept a federal gig on the Maritime Board. Now, 12 years earlier, Belton had sought and won the Republican nomination for state treasurer, but narrowly lost the general election to Democrat Walter J. Pearson by less than a one-point margin. "Oh, Howard Belton is extremely well-known throughout the state," Hatfield said in the Oregonian's front-page story announcing the appointment. "Through his agricultural activities, his insurance business presidency, his lodge work, and his long legislative service. In choosing a state treasurer, it seemed to me taxpayers most want a man who is extensively experienced and basically conservative, tough yet fair-minded when it comes to public money." The announcement came at a State House press conference, a photo of which made the front page, featuring not only Belton, but his lovely wife, Mae Brown. A few months later, Belton announced he would run for a full term against a Democratic challenger who had already filed. This is State Representative Shirley Field of Portland. "I feel a deep sense of responsibility to the job," Belton said, "and would like to continue the interest I have in public finance for the past 30 years for the benefit of Oregon and its people." Evidently, the people of Oregon wanted him to continue as well, because they elected him to a four-year term in November of 1960. Not surprisingly, around that same time, Belton realized that he might have a bit too much on his plate, and he asked to step down from his position on the board for the Canby Telephone Company. His resignation was accepted, with John Harms being elected to take his place. At the same meeting, the board agreed to spend $86,000 on a new dial board as a step towards ultimate long-distance direct dial service. "We youngsters here at the Canby Now podcast have no idea what that means, but it sure sounds cool." Canby telephone manager Rufus Kraxberger anticipated that the new hardware would be installed by April of 1961. On October 3, 1962, the infamous Columbus Day storm put 80% of the city's more than 2,000 telephone customers out of service. It took almost a month, but service had been restored for most customers by November 2nd. In 1979, the Canby Telephone Association continued its trailblazing ways, becoming the first company to cut a digital-to-digital toll route in the United States. It was also among the first companies in the Northwest to underground most of its facilities. Finally, Canby Telephone was the first company to successfully join an existing Stromberg XY switch with a Stromberg digital switch. And again, we have no idea what that means. But hey, congratulations. Way to go. Now, 2 years later, the CTA had secured a $3.1 million loan to bring, you guessed it, cable television to Canby. In July of that year, 1971, the FCC granted Canby Telephone a cable television cross-ownership waiver, which prohibited companies from owning a broadcast television station and a cable system in the same market. In 1983, 911 service came to our city, and, more important, okay, maybe not really, the city officially granted a cable TV franchise to Canby Telephone. A subsidiary, CTA Communications, was formed to sell phones, key systems, PBX systems, burglar and fire alarms, card lock systems, and a Radio Shack franchise, which I actually remember those. North Willamette Telecom, or NWT, began cable TV operation the following year. Throughout the 80s and 90s, the co-op established itself as a significant and reliable contributor to a wide variety of community causes. They donated $10,000 to Canby Kids to add lighting to Empey Field and $15,000 to Canby Police to establish a DARE program and another $15,000 for the Canby Swim Center. In 1989, they gave $175,000 to the Canby Rotary to establish a perpetual scholarship fund. They donated an enhanced 911 system to the Canby Fire District and Canby Police and gave thousands to the Chamber, High School, and Library for various projects. In 1996, Canby Telephone Association donated free internet to the Canby Public Library, Canby Adult Center, Clackamas Community College, and the Canby School District. And 10 years later, in keeping with changing times and technologies, the 100-year-old Canby Telephone Association rechristened itself as Canby Telcom, which is the name many know it by in town, even though they officially became DirectLink in 2016. As both Canby Telcom and DirectLink, the co-op has been a leader in establishing a robust fiber optic network for their entire service area, according to a multi-phase plan they developed back in 2014. Their work led them to receive the much-coveted Gimme Fiber Award from the International Fiber Broadband Association. So, Canby Telcom, DirectLink, thank you. We're glad you're in our community. And that does it for this episode of the Canby Now podcast. I'm James Walton. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Tyler, did you know that the Australian lyrebird can mimic any sound that it hears, even chainsaws?
No, that's super interesting.
Did you know that a baby puffin is called a puffling? That baby sea otters can't swim, so their moms wrap them up in pieces of kelp until they learn how to paddle?
Wait, do you know any trivia that isn't like animal related?
Not really, but here's some stuff you may not know about the Wild Hare Saloon, where Canby goes to eat and have fun.
Okay.
The Wild Hare is one of Canby's longest running locally owned restaurants. Owners Joan and Darren Moden have been in business for 16 years.
That's cool.
Heck, you were just a baby back then. And they love to give back. They've been members of the Canby Chamber for that long, and they donate over $20,000 to local sports, FFA programs, and civic organizations each year.
Wow, I'm legitimately like caught off. That's cool.
Yeah. They also support more than 30 jobs in the community through their award-winning staff, some of them as young as 18. Hey, that's older than you are.
Dude, I'm 10 months younger than you.
With the days getting longer and the weather getting warmer, the Canby Wild Hare's expansive outdoor patio is the place to be. Furry friends, welcome.
Well, that sounds great. I'm going to go check them out just off of Highway 99E next to the Space Age in Canby at 1656 Beaver Creek Road in Oregon City or on their website at thewildhairsaloon.net.
Now Hear This Canby is produced by me, Tyler Clausen. Our content director and star reporter is Tyler Frankie. And of course, our show is edited by Cameron Clausen. We also feature the vocal talents of Joy Struby and James Walden. So a round of applause to them. The song that you're hearing right now is Canby by singer-songwriter Olivia Harms, used with her permission. To find more work from her, you can visit her website olivia13.com.
Now Hear This Canby is dedicated to preserving independent local journalism and redefining local news with our fun, fresh, and energetic brand of storytelling. Our sincere thanks to our local sponsors who make this show possible. Please show your appreciation by supporting the small businesses who support us.
The production of Now Hear This Studios, Canby's locally owned, full-service audio, video, and media production company. Our mission is to produce the best content in the universe. And we'd love to help you do it. Find us online at nhtstudios.com.
I will take a motion to adjourn.
I just moved it.
I didn't even ask for it, though.